thanks for doing this today, guys, with us, mate. I want to go back to the start at Newcastle, being a young kid. For me, most talented English football player I've ever seen in my footballing career. When you was growing up, did you believe you was going to be a footballer?
When I started, I knew I was a decent player. And it was just till I wasn't really getting picked for the youth team. Colin's still getting that. And he always said, I thought maybe I was joking around too much, which I used to anyway. I wasn't really in the youth team. Jack Charlton come along. And he said, come, he pulled us in his office. He went, you're a good player. I went, I am. He went, how long you got left in your contract? So I'm like, so cocky. I went, I've got 2 years. He went, you got 2 weeks, fat man. This is, otherwise you're out this club. And so I panicked. So I remember, I thought, I better start training. So I've been like the Mars bars, the minstrels, fish and chips at night. And I used to go running at 9 o'clock at night. I don't know if everybody used to watch the Fame, We're Going to Live Forever, all that.
Oh, yeah,
That used to get us going. So I used to run with a bin bag on about 9 o'clock at night. And then I said to him, I'm getting fitter now, I'm good. He went, not yet. And they used to take us for lunch and have steak and that. I was sick of beans on toast off my mother. And then he went, right, then at 6 o'clock, meet a nice friend of mine. I went, who was it? Brendan Foster. He says, go train with them as well. So, and after about a month, I went, please no more, I beg you. I'll bin the fish and chips, everything. After about a month, I was then captain of the youth team, captain of the reserves, and then ready to play for the first team, you know, after I won the youth cup. So he did us a massive favour there, you know. When I was younger as well, we used to live a few miles from St. James Park. And on the Saturday, when I used to be playing, kicking the ball in gates in the streets and that, I could hear the Gallagher end, you know, and I always wanted to see what it was like. And I was fortunate to be, got to go and watch the reserves, and I was like a ball boy, but hiding peanuts, you know, the old days, throw peanuts and wait for your change coming back. And I remember watching Chris Waddle, and I thought, oh, I'd love to play on there one day. Unfortunately for me, it happened, you know.
It was 85, wasn't it, against Queen's Park Rangers, and Jack Charlton give you your debut. How nervous was you that day?
I mean, I remember there was, I think it was 5 or 10 minutes left, and he went, Gaz, what's going on? He says, enjoy. I was like, oof, all right. And I didn't like panic, and I didn't want to go and warm up because of the crowd and that. You know, I remember just walking on, and then we got the ball. I think it was 20 yards from their goal. I got the ball, and honestly, I really panicked. And I just seen the Gallagher then, and I turned around, run back towards my goalkeeper. I just blasted back to him, and I didn't want the ball anymore after that. You know, I was just so pleased to make my debut for Newcastle. It was an unbelievable feeling, you know. And then, you know, I played on the Saturday, got on the bus with the fans, and I remember a couple of the fans saying, have we just seen you playing? Yeah. Oh, well, you better play better the next time. And so I was like, oh, OK. Panicking a little bit.
Who were the players that you looked up to in them days?
Kevin Keegan. I remember watching him, you know, the guy he was, and coming to the club at Newcastle, it was unbelievable. And when he used to train, he used to be at the front all the time, working really, really hard, considering he didn't really have to. It just showed how much of a professionalism he was. Kenny Wharton, I learned a lot from him, even though he was left-back, just the one touch and stuff like that was class. But when you got likes of Peter Beasley, Chris Wharton, Peter was unbelievable. What a trainer as well, you know. Them four, you know, I was fortunate with Kevin Keegan, then Chris Wharton, Peter Beasley, Kenny Wharton. So, you know, I had quite... Because we won promotion that year as well, you know. Well, they did. And the atmosphere, when Newcastle, when he even scored a goal, it's fantastic. But when they were promoting that, yeah, it was incredible.
Who was the toughest players you played against? Because you grew up with probably played with the toughest player I've ever known in Billy Whitehurst.
I remember him turning up, Billy Whitehurst. He had a big Crombie on. I was, oof, hold on, matey. And so, like, I think it was the second training session, and he picked man to man. And he went, Glenn Rowler, Peter Beasley, going around like that. And he went, Gaz, are you Billy Whitehurst? I just looked like that, quivering. And the ball came and I put it through his legs. And I chuffed for myself and he went, hey, you do that again, I'll knock you out. So I panicked, right, so I didn't want the ball. And I remember, I think it was Peter Beasley, he pinged the ball and it hit me shin and it went through his legs. And I knew it was coming, so I just sort of like half put my jaw out a bit and he just bumped, get out. And he knocked us down and I got up and ran off with my kit and I jumped in my mini and drove home. I'm not coming back. I shouted to the manager, I'm not coming back anymore. And I drove home. He was like, well, you're not training today. I don't feel well, dad, today. And then I turned up on the Saturday and Billy went, no more, son. Going off your pop. That was his favourite thing. So I learned quite early on, but then we played Millwall away And he says, the manager says, Paul, playing against Terry Hurlock.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go up for a warm-up, I'm thinking, oh, is this Terry Hurlock? Where is he? And I just see this big beast coming through the den with his curly hair. So he come up, right? You know, and he's a bit shy and that. And I went, hey, Terry, like that. He just went, get up. All down my leg, stun marks. This is in the warm-up. And he went, that's before the game starts, son. So he goes back into the dressing room. I said, lads, it's OK if I don't want it today. Just try and play around us. I'll just run them off a little bit. So I was panicking there. And then, obviously, the other one was, like, Vinny. And he obviously grabbed me family allowance. And they kick off, right? So I've looked round, and he's here, in my face, breathing. He went, oh, yeah, you're a good player. I can't play football, he says, but neither can you today. And he run past us and he went, wait there. He says, I've forgot, I've got to change the corners. Right? He says, you know what was funny, Miss? I stood waiting for him. I'm like, hurry up, buddy, hurry up. Afterwards, these girls give us some roses. And I went to the physio, a young kid apprentice. I went, go and give that to Vinny. A rose off me. And I thought, I caught soften the blow. And he gave it to Vinny and he come back and he went, give you that. It was a toilet brush. So, cheers, Vinny. So when I moved to London, like, I made sure he was one of my best friends.
When did you know it was the right time to leave Newcastle?
I didn't really
want... Or did Newcastle make their mind?
No, I didn't want... I know they were struggling money-wise and I didn't really want to leave, but, you know, Miss, I mean, with Arsenal, you had great players around you constantly, you know, Arsenal's a big club and so was Newcastle. When Peter went, I was devastated. And so when the rumours come in, I wanted to leave. So what I done is I got Jimmy Fivewell, he's pretended he was my agent, and get us the same for West Ham to get away or something. But West Ham, Newcastle wouldn't let us go. I spoke to Liverpool, Kenny Dalglish. It was funny with Kenny. There's a phone call, I went, yeah? He says, oh, it's Kenny Dalglish, we're interested in buying you. So he said, let me tell you. And so he was on the phone, and after 10 minutes, I looked at my dad and I went, I haven't got a clue what he's saying, Dad. And I went, yeah, OK then. Right, cheers, I'll be back. Not a clue what he was on about. That's come from a Geordie, right? And then it was obviously the Man United movement. That was weird. I mean, yeah, I said, Alex, I'm definitely coming. Are you definitely coming? Can I go on holiday? Yep, we're going on holiday. He says, cheers, guys, I'll see you when I get back. OK, so I'm heading towards Old Trafford, and the phone goes, Irvin Scholar, listen, we'll buy your family house. Ooh. All right, Dad, listen, Spurs are going to buy us a family in the house. He went, oh, Spurs, you're 5-1 in the bookies as well, Paul. I went, oh, man. He went, yeah. I went, all right, then. So I rings Man United, they couldn't match the house, and I always wanted to get my family house, the way we were brought up in that. No. And so I rings my dad back. He went, I found the house. This is in 10 minutes. He's found the house already. So I put the phone down. I went to Spurs. I think I'll be heading towards Tottenham. I'll see, though. All of a sudden, the phone goes. He went, oh, Paul, my dad went, I forgot to tell you, he's got a garage as well. So can I have a BMW? The new one, wait. So he had the honestly. So I went, all right, then. So, yeah, Irvin Scholar, can we have a, my dad have a car? Oh, OK, then. Right, I'm definitely coming now, and I'm on my way. And the phone went again. It was Lindsay. That was classic. Paul, right, then, if my mum's getting the house and my dad's getting the car, I want a sunbed. I want a sunbed. So I was imagining regular, but... Listen, I'll definitely sign now, the deal's on, but can I have a sunbed thrown in as well? He went, just make your way, yeah, well, yeah, it's done. All right, Lizzie, got your sunbed. You know what's funny, when I went to Spurs, well, London as well, this is unbelievable. I had to have a translator to translate what I was saying to the players. They couldn't understand it, and things already happened. Yeah, they watch it here, and then that to get Chris Waddle in. Chris Waddle was half my translator. I just loved Spurs car park. The cars were completely different to the ones at St James's Park.
When I used to play for Arsenal, we used to turn up at Tottenham. They've had Porsches and
everything.
BMWs. You think, God, oh, these must be good. These must be good players.
The one, isn't it?
And then we'd win. What did Sir Alex Ferguson say?
I would have wanted 5-1.
Yeah.
To have to ring him.
Well, what happened is, by the time I got to the bookies, put money on myself, I was 2-1. My dad had told everyone in the village. So I was gutted. But when when you get in Spurs and then you get your fan mail, and I was so excited in getting fan mail, really, you know, and first one looked lovely packaged, and I thought, oh, I'll open that one, it looks nice. And I opened it up, I couldn't believe it, you stupid. He says, you told me to go on holiday and enjoy myself, and you've waited time for them up there at Spurs. He went, it's the worst thing you ever did. And he caned us. It took, I was panicking. And then when I come to ever play against Man United, I used to panic. And it took us 6 years for him to actually speak to us again. You know, which is a great man. So sometimes you think, I wonder what, if I had the same for them, you know.
Yeah, that's the same as anything.
Exactly.
And how good was Terry Venables for you?
He was brilliant.
He wasn't too happy when I shot his dad's pheasant, but for something to eat, I was bored.
He was brilliant, and I loved his dad as well. I was so sad when his dad passed away, but Venables was fantastic, you know. It took us a while to work out that if I had a great game, he would tell us I was rubbish.
He didn't play well at the ball.
And I was like, hold on, I did all right. He went, you've got to be better the next game. You know, and I went, OK, then. So, and then when I played bad, he told I was great. And it took us about 6 months to work that out. So his philosophy around me was fantastic, you know. But he was brilliant. He was brilliant to everyone, you know. He was one, like, you know, always sawing out with defence. Because he always said, you know, if you don't concede, you don't get beat. And he was right. And then I did the other bit. I loved it. I think I left too early at Spurs, even though I had the injury, you know. I would like to
The injury come in the cup final. Yeah. The semi-final, you probably had one of the best games ever. I mean, you ripped us apart. Absolutely ripped us to shreds. And then in the final, what happened?
I mean, I took Valium the night before the game. I was 2 foot in a table lamp. I was running along, bouncing off the bed.
Couldn't you sleep that night?
Nah, I couldn't sleep. I was up at 6 o'clock. I only had a few hours sleep, and I was just so excited because,
for me, when I was younger, playing in the FA Cup final was better than the World Cup
because everybody in the world really watched the FA Cup final, and my dream was to walk up them steps. So everything was on my mind, bar the game. And I just thought, all I'm going to do is today is work hard for the lads and get stuck in. That was it. And my mind was like getting stuck in instead of like thinking normal, just get the ball, enjoy it and play. So when Gary Charles came at us, and obviously the ball went to the right and I was off balance, and then I made that challenge. But I didn't know the damage I'd done until I actually walked back to the halfway lane and the knee fell a bit loose. And I asked for the ball and it went to the right. And as I turned, and that's when the knee went, you know.
And you knew that.
I knew, yeah. And obviously going back in the stretcher, and it was like, I just can't believe it. And then obviously what was in my mind is the big move to Lazio. Well, what am I going to do now, you know? And John Sheridan, I called him Step and Fetch. I asked him, how long am I going to be in? And I went, is it going to be like about a month? And he went, no. And I went, 3 months? And he went, no, longer. And then that's when I started crying a little bit. And I went, how long? And he went, it could be 9 months, a little bit over. And I just broke down crying, you know. And then going to the hospital, I was just lying in the ambulance listening to the game. I just, you know, I even wanted to go to the party afterwards and told the doc, you know, but if I had done anything was to, you know, people say look back, it would have been obviously walking up them steps, you know. Never had the opportunity to lift that trophy up, you know. I thought, right, the next long tunnel, I'll take one of the clothes off.
As we're coming out the tunnel, and he's like, big, and I went, all right, Gaffer.
You signed for Lazio in a deal. The saying was you got a £2 million signing on fee.
I knew it was going for 8.5 and then the deal would have been 5.5 because I got injured. So I'm thinking, well, that's some money that's going to be disappearing. And so I rang on the phone and Mel and them were in the office of Lazio with the translator and Dino was off and the president. No? And I'm in the Swallow Hotel at Waltham Abbey. And he said, Paul, look, are you going to get about, like, I think it was 40,000 or something a month. And you're getting 700 grand signed on for you or something. I went, am I? I said, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Make sure the translator's there. So I went to the bar and whacked in a few brandies, as you do. So I goes to the reception. I went, can you phone this office, please, in Italy? So I went, hi, Mel, this is it. Listen, I want a check now written. Are you there, translator? For £2 million and 100 grand a month. Cheers, bye. Call us back in 3 minutes with it done. And then I put the phone down. And then the phone rang and went, Paul has a phone call. So I was like, rub my hands together and said, we've got the check now, we've written it for £2 million and you're on 100 grand a month. So my mum and dad were like that. But yeah, it was a massive deal, you know. Even then, the 100 a month, even got tax 60. But, you know, when I went over there, obviously, you've seen what the crowds are like and I loved it.
How did you find Italy? You know, obviously a different country.
I mean, when I went over there first, for a week with my dad, I watched them train. And I literally was in tears. I told my dad, there's no way I can do that. There's no way I can do that. I remember Brian Kidd coming over with his pen and paper. And I says, oh, yeah, kid, what are you doing? And he went, I'm just going to write some stuff down. And I was sort of like, yeah, good luck. And we're training for about 40 minutes, and I stood near the fence like him, and he went, phew, some training session, that. I went, that's a warm-up. And he went, oh, I'll put this book away then. He says, that won't work for Gary Palace, that. And I sat with his biscuits, and I started laughing. And it took me 4 months to get used to that. But it was scary at first, because he'd seen how many people were at the airport, and it was like, oh, the pressure was on straight away. But not the performing, it was like, where am I going to live? What am I going to do, you know? But after 4 months, I absolutely loved it out there, you know, and I couldn't do what they were doing. It's like, back home, if I went for a few pints, say, on a Sunday or whatever, and then on Monday, I knew there'd be 8 or 9 who were in the same boat. Over there, there was no one, you know. They drank before the game and not afterwards. They would have a glass of wine with them, pretty much. But then I started to love it, and I started, like, getting training hard and fit. And I remember one season, I said, well, the pre-season's rock hard, yeah, so I'm just going to enjoy myself. So I went to Florida, I'm on the Pina Coladas, and that is a holiday. The phone went, and Paula, we're back in training in 2 days' time. Are you okay to be able to run an hour? I've just looked at myself in the mirror, and I went, oof, I don't think so. Yeah, definitely. So I put it down, I went and got my kit on. I went for a run, it lasted 1 minute or two, and I went, our pre-season's hard. And I went back, Dean was off, looked at us, he went, Tony, such and such. He went, you're not training with us. And he got a fitness coach and took us to Switzerland for 75 days. I had to do, so the season started and I was still in Switzerland. I was punished big time. I had to do 36 mile on a bike, get off the bike, do an 8 mile run, and then 6 5-minute running in the pool without any floats. And it was horrendous. But I come back fit, put it that way.
I'd won 100 grand a week to do that.
So the money was well deserved. Yeah. But the lifestyle was lovely as well, you know, as long as you stuck to the football. And I did well out there, you know, people realised I went there with a bad knee anyway. I wouldn't use that as any excuse because I knew I was capable of still doing the stuff.
How did you find that league? Obviously, I'll go back again, most talented English football player I've ever seen. You've gone over there in the hardest league, I think, at the time, without a doubt, the Italian league. Mm. How did you find it?
What they did, when you had the ball, they'd let you go so far into their half and then they'd be on you. You know, you get 35 yards, 40 yards from their goal and they're on you, miss, straight away, closing you down and that. And then a little tug of the shirt, they'd be down. I didn't know how to do all that. The first time I played against AC Milan with Baresi, Maldini, Rijkaard, Van Basten, and I honestly said to myself, right, this is the one. You know, I did well in the World Cup. This is myself to prove against the best, that, you know, I'm up against the best. And we're winning 1-0, after 5 minutes. And I was like, yeah, here we go. I never got another touch for 80 minutes. We've got to be 5-1. And they were frightening. And I went, wow, this is a standard you've got to get. I use your fitness and technically as well, not just like you getting the ball and taking them on, because once you did that, they're on you, you know. And it took us a while to adjust to that. We play on a Sunday, and we do training on a Saturday.
And then sometimes if we didn't train well on a Saturday, even though the game's on the Sunday, we have to come on Sunday morning and train, and then have a shower, and then we'll go for pre-match, and then go and play the game as well.
Yeah, or sometimes like, I'd say like, the next wave, I'll see you after the game, come and enjoy it. And we'll play the game, and the president will come in and say,
I wasn't good enough, guys. And yeah, you work, and then you work. And then when you finish working, you work more.
So you're not going home.
You're shooting off for 3 days.
We're taking you away, and that's it. You're away training again solid for three days.
I remember you coming back from Lazio like for an England game, and we was chatting, and you went, if you get a corner and you want to head the ball, you're going to score.
Yeah.
He used to say to me, I score loads of goals here with my head because no one wants to head the ball.
Yeah, it was over there, you're right. You know, over there, it was like, there were more interest in tugging your shirt or pulling you. I couldn't handle going in the box because they pull your shirt, so I used to wait out and then I scored a few headers over there, you know.
You worked under Dino Zoff. He was your manager at the time, I mean, a legendary goalie in Italy. What was he like? What was different about him to other managers?
He used to join in, even over there in training, he used to join in as well, the goalkeeper, and he was a decent player. Even in pre-season, we used to have the secretaries join in, the pre-season, they had to do pre-season as well. Yeah, but Dino was brilliant. He went, remember this, I thought, how do I settle in with the team here? And we're doing pre-season, and we're in the back of the bus, and we all have our suits on, and I could see Dino at the front with his suit on, with the seat next to him. So I went, oh, I've got an idea, yeah. So we're going through this tunnel on the way to Napoli to do a pre-season, and it was like this tunnel was pitch black for about 500 yards, and then the next tunnel was like half a mile. I thought, right, the next long tunnel, I'll take all my clothes off. And they were going along, and I just took all my clothes off and just walked to the front of that next one. As we're coming down the tunnel, and he's like, big, and I went, all right, Gaffer. He just shook his head. I just walked back naked to the guys. Went, ah, he's a nice guy. And then we're having a meal at the night time, and he said, I wanted a word with us. He said, I've got a present for you. And I thought, oh, another present, this is nice. And it was a number 10 shirt. I loved wearing a number 8, and I was quite superstitious. And but to give him a number 10 was an honour, you know. And so I accepted that. He used to, after training, he used to go, Ciccioni, that means fatty. Ciccioni, vieni qua, come here. And I said, yeah, what? I challenge you now for beer. Right, okay then, I used to get excited. He used to whop us in free kicks all the time. Over the wall, because he knew where to put the ball, you know. And all the time, and he just walked, we go, Ciccioni, Ciccioni, all the time. He used to drive us nuts. And then we had this new manager, Zemin. And they said, Gazza, you won't like him because he's tough. I used to wind him up, though. We used to walk back to the hotel eventually when he let us join in. And I remember this turkey, this big, massive turkey. We used to pass all the time. He used to say, all the time, make this noise. Everyone used to laugh at it. I got his whistle, jumped over the fence and put it around the turkey. And the turkey said, he's come back. He's like, where's my whistle? Where's my whistle? And I went, I don't know. And I took him directly in front of the, I says, oh, look at it. And he looked, did you see this turkey? You go, now I've got the next Lazio manager running the field, trying to get his whistle off a turkey.
After that, you went to Rangers. Why Rangers?
I think Aston Villa was the first one. I spoke to Doug Ellis, and, you know, he was more interested in talking about him. And so I didn't really fancy Villa. And then Glenn Hoddle come over. And I was having a serious chat with Glenn Hoddle, and my tooth was loose, and it come out in this sandwich. So I spent half an hour looking for it, and as he was talking, well, yeah, in a minute, and I'm looking for my tooth. I don't think he was amused. So I thought in a minute, and I was trying to find my tooth in this sandwich. I found it by that time, the conversation was over. I went back, and Walter Smith has just come over, and I remember Walter coming up, and he says, right, let me tell you about Glasgow Rangers. I went, no, let me tell you what I've got in the fridge. And I gave him a beer, and I went, I'll have one. I said, I'm signing. And he says, well, speak to the chairman. And I says, OK. And he says, oh, Paul, look, at our club. And I went, I'm signing. See you later. Bump. And I went to the ground. You know, I went early in the morning. And then the chairman said, look outside. And when I seen the fans outside, it was incredible. You know, the buzz as well, you know, wanting to play again. And, you know, Walter Smith was great. Archie Knox, phenomenal coach, phenomenal.
Would you say that was the best football you played on a consistent basis, and the most enjoyable football you played?
Yeah, definitely. Good banter, you know, Durante and Fergie and Coisley. We had a great bunch of lads there. But, you know, people think when you're playing for Glasgow Rangers, it's easy. People didn't realise is that if I'm playing for, like, say, Kilmarnock, no disrespect to Kilmarnock, and I'm playing against Glasgow Rangers, I want to try my best because I want to move to Glasgow Rangers. Mm. So every opponent I come across really tried.
Yeah,
and give them credit, they did try. You know, they did try. I had some days I just didn't know what to do, we're just rubbing them. Well, I remember one kid, he was a boss, he used to be a boxer, and that, he played against us, and he went in all the papers, yeah, I'm going to mock us, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have a hard time. I scored 2, megged him, he got sent off, and I left my boot at the end of the pitch for him. And I picked them up and said, hey, yeah, mate, that's what it's like to play with them. I remember one game. I remember one of the doctors in his physio room. I went, what are you doing there? And he went, I'm playing golf on the computer. I went, oh, give it a look. And so it was like 15 minutes to kick off. So what I'm doing now, I'm warm up anyway. So I got playing in the golf game, right, on the computer. And I'm nearly getting holes in one, and I'm excited and that.
All of a sudden, right,
when the physios come in, Gaza. Do you know it's 3:05? They're waiting for you. I forgot about the time of the kick-off and everything. So if I'm running out, Walter just looked at us like that, and I went, sorry, ref, you know. I was playing with my fingers still going like that.
I don't know if you played in a Newcastle-Sunderland game, but you played in Arsenal-Tottenham, you played in the Rome derby, and you played in the Rangers-Celtic. Mm. What was the Rangers-Celtic game like?
They were all different. I mean, I was sub for the Newcastle Sun, I just got called Fatty. for 15 minutes every time I warmed up.
That a lot was of people it. Called
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know it's ridiculous. Morris Ball's fault. The Spurs and awesome one, you know. I think you have to be a runner to feel that as well, even though I felt it. Up there, it's scary. It's like pure hatred. Some of the bars up there, the pool tables, you know, they're green. If you go into a Rangers bar, they've made it blue. The snooker tables, they won't use a blue ball, they'll use a green, a different colour ball, and then the orange ball.
Really?
They'll use a different colour ball, yeah. Fortunate for me, and unfortunate for the Celtic fans, I mean, I played in 11, unbeaten in 11, scored 4. So that's mean to them.
Well, that's a little
bit. Yeah, but them derbies, the atmosphere, the noise, you know, it was just like pure hatred. So when we used to get a result, we used to come back through the Celtic way, really slowly, and wind them up a little bit. Well, I enjoyed them because I think I was fortunate most because all the Weir fans anyway, every team, they still loved us, you know. Yeah. They were always good because I tried to respond back by having a laughing joke with them because if you were, I always felt like if I had a go back at them and got ratted, then I'm going to lose concentration in the game. Anyway, I didn't really concentrate in the games. So I just wanted to go out there and enjoy it. You see the defenders, hey, just let you know, if I don't know what I'm going to do with this ball, you've got no chance. Sure, Paul, I'm concentrating. I used to drive them nuts by just talking about anything. I'm going out with your girlfriend, she's looking at us in the stand and all that, see, stuff like that. No, you're not. I am, look at it. They'd look up and I'll be waiting. Any of the crowd over 2,500 people, you get the money. So I'm running out, like, imagine the crowd's packed. I went, but it only held 2,250 people.
You left Rangers and come to Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
It must have been the Brian Robson factor. Or was it me? I don't know.
Yeah, it was both. A bit of both. You said you'd have a laugh with Merce. But yeah, I was good. When I left Rangers, I was still 10 games to go. And I knew it was a win promotion. But like we had a laugh before when I said, Merce, I'm top man, I know that. And we went out to Wembley, didn't we? And everyone went, one Paul Merson. I went, yeah, I get your drift. I get your drift, Merson. But yeah, it was the same. I had good banter. I mean, Brian Robson had a big factor in that, you know, he's what a player. You know, like I said, I called him dog poo because he was everywhere. And obviously, I knew you as well, which helped us, you know. I just used to like it when we had a day off and going there, batter Gordon McQueen at darts. he was definitely bully with his head. I enjoyed it, you know, because, you know, Janino was class. Yourself was, no disrespect, Paul, you were class as well, you know. You scored some class goals and it was like back home, you know, it was only up the road. And, you know, I thought the Middlesbrough fans might not like this with being Geordie, but this stuck to as well.
You stayed at the house a lot with Jimmy and Keith, my brother.
Yeah.
And then we used to travel up on the train from Stevenage, didn't we, in the mornings?
I was.
But then we went away with England, La Manga, and you didn't get picked.
Yeah.
I mean, was it a set-up, was it not a set-up?
I don't know. Well, I just knew, you know... I was told by a couple of men just be careful with Hoddle, where they try to make a name for himself. But 2 games prior to that, I played in a friendly against South Africa. I think it was at Man U, and I got man of the match, and I got injured, and he went, oh, you know, Paul, please get fit for the Italian game. I said, yeah, I'll be all right. And we played Italy away. I did well, got man of the match. And Gaza came back, seen conquered all that. It was just so weird when I seen everyone sitting in the corridor. And I'm like, that's weird. What are you waiting for? Yeah, lads. And I didn't even know that. Oh, we've got to wait in every 5 minutes to see if we're getting picked or not. And I think that wasn't good. Anyway, and then it was only till I seen Glen Road I was close to. I went in, I went, yeah, am I getting picked for the World Cup? Yeah. Because I'm at the back of the queue, sort of thing, back of the lid.
You're one of the late ones, because I was the next one in after you.
It would have been easy for you then, because there was no door there, was it?
There was nothing. It was like Beirut. Honestly, what did you do to the room?
When I seen Glenn roll out of tears in his eyes, I just ran straight in and I 2 foot of the door and Phil Neville come running out and he went, look, let me explain. I went, no, you've got nothing to explain about. And I was a boot of the lamp. I threw something over. Every time he tried to talk, what can you say to someone that you just, sorry, but you're not going to the World Cup? And especially myself, where I just absolutely, you know, I just love playing for my country. Yeah. There's no better, you know, putting on Sri Lions, and I just loved playing for my country, and I just knew every time I put on that white shirt, I performed. I really did. I got 57 games and beaten four, and two of them were on penalties, and the other two were Brazil or something. Mm. And then it was half embarrassment. Wow, I'm not going to, what am I going to do? I'm not planning anything.
Well, the pride kicks in then,
Then the pride, yeah. And I remember before I actually joined Middlesbrough, I rang Brian up, so I've been crying my eyes out. I said, I'm in the house. He's not taking us the World Cup. And he's like, calm down, calm down. And I reckon it took me about a year to get over that. It really did, you know. I just, you know, because not knowing that, people didn't realise that. Advice to some people today, whatever you have in football, make the most of it, because you just never know. And I never knew that was going to be me.
Well, no, to be fair, before that, you were the biggest set ever to go.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd have walked off the pitch after the Italy game away in 0-0, and someone said, oh, Gazza ain't going to the World Cup, you'd have laughed. You would have. You'd have gone, don't be silly, no chance. I mean, I walked in after, I was after you, and Glenn looked like Casper. He looked like he was white as a ghost, honestly. I don't know. You know, honestly, he just went, you're going, and then I just went out.
I think they've still got bits of memorabilia of the room and the bar, and they were in La Manga. But it is like, for that year, I was like, you know, it's like you said, the pride and everything. It was like, how can I pull this
together? Could you watch the World Cup that year?
No.
No, you didn't?
No, I didn't watch any of it. I went away, and I went away as long as the World Cup was on. And I kept out the country, away from everything, you know. Even though I want the lads to do well, don't get me wrong. And I know the likes of Nicky Butt and Scholes, you know, them Becks and them were coming through, but still I knew I had in this. Like I said, the last game prior to that was Italy, and I did really well. Got man of the match, and, you know, when you play like that and you think, oh, well, I'm definitely going, I hadn't really done anything wrong, so it was a bit disappointing, really, but that year was... I did enjoy the football.
Biggest disappointment in your footballing career?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And not, you know, as I said before, not only that much, you never know. Like, in 1990, 8 years later, not to know that was me only World Cup, last and only, you know, and it's like...
Well, 1990, you was the best player in the world at that. But it happened so quickly, and it does. And then after Middlesbrough, you went to Everton, obviously back joining Walter Smith again.
Yeah, well, I just thought, you know...
Did you feel then... From an outsider, did you feel, I hope you don't mind me saying it, did you feel then that you was coming towards the end?
Yeah, well, I spoke to Kenny Dalglish and he said, Paul, listen, have you planned anything? I went, before, I've got a few years left. He went, no. You think, yeah, but you wouldn't believe how quick that would come fly over. Mm. He says, make plans for when you finish. And I went, yeah, and I blanked what he said. And then I thought, oof, you know, I'm not getting around as much as I should do, yeah. You know, and I just felt I needed another buzz somewhere. You know, and no, even though I loved it at Middlesbrough, I wasn't feeling good at myself. Mm. Nothing to do with the football club, it was me yeah, personally. Yeah. I just thought Walter Smith was brilliant for us at Glasgow Rangers. I'll go to him, and I went, and he said, you know, I think you've let me down a little bit. And, you know, him and Archie Knox kept some and didn't go to the papers about anything, and I really appreciate what they did for us, you know. I should never have left Edmonton, but I think the reason why I left Edmonton was because they were getting rid of Walter Smith, and I think, I don't know, because Walter did so well for us. I wish sometimes I wish I'd give Moisey a chance, because he's come on to be, you know, a great manager.
You left Everton, you went to Burnley. What was that like, dropping down?
Well, I left, and I'm in the car going to Burnley, and Moisey rang us up and said, Gaz, I'll come back, give us a chance to work with you. But by that time, my mind was made up, because Stan turned. You know, what he was saying over the phone was fantastic. So, you know, I'm on about 12 a week at Edmonton. So I said, what's the deal? He went, well, we'll get you like five, seven a week, and seven every time you play. Make up for it. I went, okay, fantastic. So, and he says, also, we'll give you £10 per shirt that's sold. I went, oh, fantastic. Okay, then I'll make up my wages. You know, I'll go and play for Burnley. So we get there, and he's like, we start training. And Gazza, come here. He says, he's not training with them. I'll have a cigarette with me. So I started laughing. And I thought, yeah, are you serious? He went, yeah, go on. So then we're coming to the game and that. We're playing. Not playing because we've not trained. And he told us not to train. So what they were doing, he hardly played us because I was saving £7,000 every game. And I didn't cotton on for a bit. And I went, hold on. So I went, why are you signed us for? He says, well, I've got a plan. He says, what I'll do is I'll not play you. He says, and then when we get into the playoffs, I want you to come on with 2 minutes to go and score us a free kick. And that's it, we're in the Premiership. I went, hold on, no way. I said, I want to train, I want to play. Wait, and play, just come meet up. And so I think I played a couple of games. And then, you know, when you pick, and I'm thinking, well, at least I get 10 quid a shirt. Everyone had gas going in the back. Burnley, so I pick up my wages, and it's got
an extra £30.
They sell three shirts. I went, Stan, you must be good, man.
Then after that, probably being probably one of the most famous English footballers of all time, you went over to China. Mm. What were they like with you?
Gansu Jinma. I mean, they went, you know, we're giving you this, and it's a massive club, and it's big, and all that, and the players, they love you, and all that. So I went there, and I see all the players on the field. So, you know, give it I am sort of thing, and I ran on the pitch, all like, looking as like that. Hi, guys. Not even applause or not. It's like, who are you?
They didn't have a clue who you were?
Not anything. I went, oh, God. I went, it's like, do you know who I am? Have you seen any videos? They didn't even have TVs where I was. It was the most polluted area in the world. So I've met the players, and not one of them applauded me. I was like, yeah? And so I'm like, I'll show them I'm getting the football pitch sort of thing. And, like, I'm thinking, what have I done? I scored on my debut, and then they weren't paying me wages. I didn't get paid anything. And then that's when the SARS come over. That was it. I was on a plane. I was away. And that was it. And then I flew back, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do now? And then, obviously, Boston. Most of that was class. I'm sitting in the house, and I'm like, Dad, what am I going to do? I was running. He says, Paul, get a phone call. Are you interested in Boston? Hold on. Dad, Boston, America. Wow. I went, oh. Get me suitcase packed and so on. I said, oh, hi, Dad, lovely, yeah. Yeah, I'm signing. Cheers, mate. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll be there. Don't worry. I'll get my stuff sorted out, suitcase. And so excited. Oh, I'm getting to Boston, America. Fantastic. Well, honestly. As I meet them, I just see these two blokes at the train station. I've got my suitcases. What time's the flight? No, not flight. It's just up the road. Oh, I went, Boston. Yeah, Boston later. I went, oh, my God. So I'm like, well, what's the deal you have then? He says, well, we'll only give you like 500 quid a week. He says, well, what we'll do, he says, any of the crowd over 2,500 people, you get the money. So I went, well, that's not so bad, is it? I said, that's not so bad. That, you know? I said, if I'm playing, it's going to be a full house. So I'm running out, right? Imagine the crowd's packed. I went, but it only held 2,250 people. So I got down to that. Even to this day, I still think about my celebration. I was going to run round the stadium, run round, right, just keep running, but then run down the tunnel, dive into the bath, and then come back out.
Getting picked for England, 1990. Did you know you was going to go to that World Cup or not?
I remember meeting up with England squad for the under-21s and B team. I used to meet with the big team, the players, the first team squad, and I used to see them all in England. I thought, oh, it would be lovely to play for them one day and that. Bobby Robson was a guy that kept the same team. If, it doesn't matter how bad you play for your club, but if you played brilliant for England, he kept it. So it was always Neil Webb and Brian Robson. And we went away to Sweden to play to qualify, and Dave Seaman was on the bench with us. And then Neil Webb, God bless him, got injured. Listen to me, God bless him. I was over the moon. Sorry, Webby. So I thought, oh, I might get a chance, yeah. And after the game, Sir Bobby Robson said to us, look, we're going to be playing in Israel. I think it was against Israel. He went, you know, show us what you're made of. And I went, well, I'll show you. 20 minutes of the game, I'm nervous anyway, playing for my country. And I panicked and give the ball back. And my centre-half wasn't there. And he ran on and clipped it over Shilton. No, in my mind, the rest of the game, I'm not going to the World Cup. And I thought, oh, please just let's play one more game to show you. And he went, right, I'll give you this one game because I was Czech Republic. He says, show me. If you do well, yeah, you're going to the World Cup sort of thing. I scored one, set up three, you know. And I remember probably went in the dressing room after the game and I'm chuffed as anything. I'm thinking, oh, I've got to be going to the World Cup now. He went, right, guys, we just realised now we need two bowls. One for him, didn't even look at us. But one for him, he knew where I was sitting. One for him and one for you, right? Brilliant. So I thought, oh, I've got a chance, yeah. When you get the call to say you're going to the World Cup, it was an unbelievable feeling. I started thinking, you know, where I come from, my back roots, you know, the way I was brought up, the park I used to play on and all that just come flushing back, you know. things really happened so quick from a move to Newcastle, then 5 years, to playing in the World Cup. It was incredible.
How did you find the World Cup?
I tried to take it like a boys' club, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I had a laugh, like, just like we, you know, when we played that snooker and we had a laugh most. I remember Trevor Stevens, like, going around the pool. How are you guys? Who's next? I've had a half an hour with him. It was like, I've been there about 8 days or something, and I thought, I need a cocktail. So I went to the cocktail thing on the beach, and I went, can I have a pina colada, please? And he gives us a pina colada. And all of a sudden, I see Bobby Robson. I went, oh, I'm not going to the World Cup. And he goes, hey, you, what you got there? I went, a milkshake, Gaffa. He went, oh, can I have a taste of that? Now imagine, I'm sweating. It's coming up. And he went, very nice. He says, can I have one of them? So now I'm more panicking. I'm like, oh. So I'm behind the Gaffa going. So he's must have caught him down and he's given one. And he's went, taste yours? he knows. She said, another taste. He went, nah. He says, it's not the same. And the guy went, what do you mean? He says, well, where's my straw and the umbrella and the cherry? I was over the moon. Oh, can I have another one as well, mate? We didn't know what was going on back home. You know?
No, that's what I was going to ask you. You know, you didn't know what was going on. And it was going along. Then the famous incident in the semi-final, it's probably one of the most pictured things of you. You know, when you get booked, which you shouldn't have got booked. After that, when it gets to the penalties, why didn't you take a penalty?
I just honestly didn't think me. I mean, I know I played tennis the night before.
You were the most talented footballer in the team.
Yeah.
In that competition, I thought you was the best player in the world of football at the time, watching it at home. Was there ever a time in your head when the game finished where you thought, right, get myself composed now, I've got to take a penalty?
Well, you know, I used to have a problem when I was younger of dying. And when that game finished, even though I'd cried as well and then cried again, I just looked at the fans as well and I just thought, my life's over. At such a young age as well, you know, I thought, I'm never going to have this again. And I started crying again. And then you realise, oh, there's some penalties, you know, we've still got a chance of going to the final. But my head was, like, gone. Yeah. And I was crying. I was gutted. I thought my life had ended, sort of thing. And there was no way I was in the right frame. I didn't bottle it, I just was not in any frame of mind.
What number would you have been, though, if the penalties would have
gone on? I was third. You know, I think when I look back now, since you mentioned that, Merce, I think there have been times even for that, from the game ending to the penalties, I didn't even think there was penalties. Yes. I was so gone in my head, wow, you know, what am I doing? And then, it was, you know, sometimes the game, when you're playing the last 20 minutes, I was thinking, if we get the final, I'm going to play in this final. And then I thought, you know, just do it for the guys and work hard. You know, and Bobby Robson and Terry Butcher was great, and Waddle, and they were coming up with us, and Terry Rumi, I mean, Sir Bobby Robson round us, and you did proud. We still was. And it was like, sometimes he's high in the out. You know, we still got penalties. But, you know, I was just like, oh, you know, the tears, and you know, I didn't know what was going on back home, how big it was, But I just thought, you know, after this, whatever happens anyway, I just thought my career's over with.
How did you feel when that plane door opened and you see all them people there?
We're just about to get off the plane, and I was sitting in the aisle seat, and Gary Lineker, I stood up and he went, Paul, be careful. I said, what do you mean? He went, just be careful. And I didn't have a clue what he was on about. And I went, oh, yeah. You know, like, so I'll be here. And when them gates opened, the doors opened to the aeroplane and I seen everyone, that was scary. I was like, wow. Then you realise, it sort of kicked in, everyone's been watching the World Cup. And then I didn't realise they're all singing my name. And, you know, then the back of your hairs on your neck stand up and it's like, and I never thought, how am I going to cope with this?
I hope you don't mind me asking this, and if you do, just tell me, just say no. Do you think walking off that plane that day was the downfall, the start of your downfall?
I would have thought so,
and
yeah.
I don't mean downfall, but, you know, like, everybody knew Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to buy Paul Gascoigne a drink. Everybody wanted to be in Paul Gascoigne's company.
The pressures, it was like, when I got back, when I went through the crowd back to my dad's and we're heading back home to my hometown, I thought, Dad, I need a hamburger. And I went in, the whole place stopped. And I got mobbed, so I couldn't have a hamburger. And I went, oh, well, it's all right, when I get home. When I got home, the press and the fans outside the house, I was getting fan wheel, I was getting, you know, the black bin bags, I was getting 8 a day full. You know, it was unbelievable. I was getting adverts thrown at us, I was like cardboard cuts, I was ever. And then I started like, hold on, you know, I've got to forget I play football, yeah. But sometimes all that it took away, and then my ego kicked in a bit. You know, I'm like, oh, hold on, you know, I'm Paul Gascon, but I'm never ever like that. And you know, and I thought, you know, I just wanted the season to start and get playing where I felt safe then. I didn't never realise that for 90 minutes on a pitch would be the safest place for me. And I think that's why I probably enjoyed football more than anything.
And then 6 years later, it all come back again, like Euros 96.
Yeah.
Because you probably thought after 1990, England didn't qualify in 94, I'm probably never going to get this again. I've played in the World Cup. The Euros must have been exactly the same as the World Cup. I know in worldwide it isn't, but it was the Euros, it was in England, and again, it was phenomenal.
Well, I was looking for, you know, I had a few injuries and then the ups and downs of my life, I would say. But I was still enjoying football and I was trying my best as well and enjoying playing well. But then I had that little trip to Hong Kong and obviously it was my birth.
What happened? No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I know. It was, all I wanted was one filling and it didn't go well. But no, we went out and that, and then I seen...
Well, the best thing that come out of that was the best celebration of all time.
Yeah, well,
so.
We had the night out and that. And then when I come back, I was getting sick. So it was so funny. I rang up this little hotel in Wales. I went, I need to get away to Gaza. He went, you'd be safe here. I said, listen, I'm not being big-headed. I said, it's me. He went, look, at you grandstayed here for 6 weeks and no one knew he was there. So I checked in the hotel and I said, right, I'm going fishing. I'd only been there half an hour.
I went down to the lake and he rings us up. He said, not going to believe this. I went, I am. I said, how many are there? He went, there's 30 photographers outside. He went, wow. I went, just get me suitcases, bring them.
So he brings them out and I put the suitcases on the boat. And probably the biggest lock in Wales. I'm running across it. I'm like, I've got the European Championships in 10 days' time. What am I doing? So I'm basically on the other side. I go to the stairs in this hotel. Where I was in a hotel. It was a motel. It was £3 a night. The blankets were that thick. Honestly, the bulbs didn't work. And then I left there. And 6 days ago, and I went and checked in the health form and just tuned myself up and get going again for the Championships. And then, obviously, we met up. And I thought, you know, this is brilliant. Now the bus is coming back again. I want to play. I want to do well in my home country. I've been getting sick. Didn't want to pick for the Euro 96. And I just sort of shrugged that off. And then Terry Venables come in. He says, look, Paul, I was thinking about making you captain. And I went, wow. And then it's amazing. In my mind, he was thinking the same thing. And I was the same as him. He went, but if I make you captain, you're already under enough pressure as it is. It's going to make it worse. The tournament started. And I went to the... Like, when we arrived at the ground for the first game in Switzerland, we arrived in the tunnel, and I always went up the tunnel at the top and just to try and sort that atmosphere. And what I did wrong the first game was, I went to the top of the ramp, and the guy comes over, hey, Paul. I said, what's the matter, pitch? He went, oh, the England women's team's just been playing on it. They want to meet you. So I went, oh, all right, where they're in the dressing room. Mercy, obviously, I walked in the dressing room. They're all naked. I guess I'm all right, mate. I'm like, wow. Yeah. I got substitute that for 70 minutes. So that was my excuse. And then the second game was obviously Scotland. I couldn't sleep. And I knew there was something up with Terry after working with Tottenham. So at 10 o'clock, I couldn't sleep. So I went to his room, knocked. He went, oh, is it coming? And he's sitting there. And he went, what do you want? I went, can I have a word? He went, yeah, what do you want? I went, are you playing us tomorrow? And he went, I've been thinking about it. I'm not too sure. What do you mean? And I'm like, you know, when your throat's gone, I said, what do you mean you're not playing this? I said, I know Scotland, I've been playing, I play up there. And he went, no, you didn't play well in the last game. I said, I know, but the first game and that. He says, go to sleep. I said, I can't sleep. He said, are you playing this? And he went, and this went on for half an hour. And he went, of course I'm playing here. No, get yourself to bed and get to sleep. I don't want tears, Gaffa. And obviously, I ran into the room like a little kid. Ooh, I'm playing.
Was that the best goal you've ever scored?
Yeah, and Arsenal takes some beating, but I think that one, because I played for my country as well, and to be at home, and in the Euro 96, what better to get a goal like that, you know? And then I was playing in Scotland. That celebration, I got a photocopied about 50 times. And stuck around the dressing room. Because for 3 months prior to that tournament, I got hammered of the lads in the dressing room in Scotland. Yeah, we're gonna whop you through. And I just went, listen, don't worry, lads. 11 years know how I play, just one. I know how all yous play. So don't worry about that. I never thought about that.
I bumped into Colin Henry in London. I went, oh, Gasser, you all right? I said, I thought you lived in Bournemouth.
And I went, how are you, Colin? I thought I left you at Wembley. When I see Colin Henry, he always just says, too imaginative, he panics. Bless him. He says, oh, you need a screwdriver to get yourself back up that grass.
Last question. How near was you to the when the ball went across the six-yard box?
That was this.
Did you think you'd scored?
Yeah. I honestly thought it's my goal, yeah?
Yeah.
When it floated over my head, and then I realised when I was going to Shearer, I looked across and I'm sort of free, yeah. And anything that comes across that box, firm, I'm scoring. And as it's coming across, you know, your eyes on the ball. And then I'm ready, waiting just about, and then you see the keeper going for it, and I honestly thought the keeper was going to get a touch, and I didn't want to go past the ball. And I've stopped for like half a second. Even to this day, I still think about my celebration. I was going to run round the stadium, run round, right, just keep running, but then run down the tunnel, dive into the bath, and then come back out. This is what I still think about my celebration all the time.
No Tony Adams.
I was, he's Arsenal. I really wanted to pick Tony, but...
Oh, that's probably why I'm not in it then.
Yeah.
Now we're going to pick your 1 to 11 of the best players you've ever played with. Or 10, because you got me.
Yeah, that's right. What? Well, I'm a bit nervous picking this, because I know I'm going to get abuse wherever I pick.
What shape are you going to play?
I'd probably just go a 4-3-1-2.
Right, then. You say that like just like... Yeah, that's, that is it.
11, right. Yeah. 11 plays, yeah. I played with some great goalkeepers, obviously, and, you know, Schultz was class as well. You know, and Andy Gorham, I remember when we were signing for Rangers, you know, someone told me Andy Gorham hadn't made a mistake in 18 months. What a goalkeeper. He was class. But unfortunately, because I battled that goal past him, he's not making me 11. The one I'm going for is what a goalkeeper. You played with a guy, Dave Seaman. He would have been better if he had got that mullet cut. But now, I don't think he realised how good he was. You know, the two penalty saves he made in the Euro 96. All right, I know he didn't really go for the one I scored against him. Bless him. But
he said he should have caught that.
Yeah, he said he's got his studs caught in the ground as well. That, he should have used them ice skates then when he did it, should he come dancing on ice. But no, what a goalkeeper, you know, he trained hard. He's funny as well. When I was with him, I just go like that, show me hand, he'd laugh. He was my fishing partner as well. Saved me life once, I think I fell in the lake and he saved us. And I like woke up and did I catch anything? When we trained with England, some of this, you know, he was behind, God bless him, behind Schultz and Chris Woods in the World Cup, and God bless him, he did his finger in and he didn't make it, and I felt so gutted for him because me and him were like, I remember against Poland, we were both subbing, we were warming up, and like, oh dear, we're going to the World Cup, we're going to, you know, that's how excited we were.
Yeah.
But some of the saves he used to pull off, I scored a few goals against him, but for me, he was solid, you know, he didn't really say much. You could hear him, but he didn't say much, he just concentrated on his game, and I'd have to go for Dave Seaman in goal.
Your right back?
You know, I was fortunate to play some great right backs. You know, even as going back as John Anderson and play for Newcastle. But for me, it's got to be Gary Neville. Only because of the fact his fitness, you know, you see players today as wing backs really getting forward and getting around the back and whipping in crosses. And people say this is a new game, but he was doing it 10, 15 years ago. He had a funny run on him, and he was a mourner. But yeah, I think Gary, because I think, you know, what Alex Ferguson did for him, man, it must have been amazing. You know, he come on leaps and grounds, he was confident, he was really calm, he was a quiet lad, he was quiet, but he, you know, he got stuck in as well. But for
team
me,
team player as well, wasn't
he? Definitely a team player. He was a guy I've seen, he never jogged back either, you know, but he was up and down that lane, and he was an honest player. All right, so he mourned. I like a player that mourns, you know, I played with you, he mourned a hell of a lot. But yeah, I'm going for Gary Neville.
Left back?
I dare not leave this guy out because of the first, I was fortunate to play with Stuart Pearce. I heard he used to wear deliberately wear mini shorts so his thighs looked massive. No, he was a strong bloke. And for me, when he scored that, I've never really told him this, but when he scored that penalty, I was so proud of him. At Wembley, when he obviously missed the one World Cup, I was so proud because he had the ball to go up and take it. Where with me in the World Cup, I didn't. Just my head wasn't there. But for him to go up and he's seen his reaction, he must have waited so many. Imagine he's waited 6 years to do that. So you know, and also with Stu, he was one when we got beaten in 1990. He had to go for the drugs testing, like you know, your random test. So he missed out getting coerced, Stu. So he was on his own, bless him. But I always remember one tackle I played against. I'm so pleased I wasn't a right winger playing against him. You know what I mean? Like looking at him. But one tackle was a crunching tackle. I'm in the centre circle, and the ball is on the left, and him and Van den Douw.
I remember that tackle. It was on telly.
Wow, it was on tackle. Yeah, crunched, and the ball flew about 40 yards. I mean, wow, mate, it was.
I remember
the noise that come from there was incredible. And also, he had a free kick on him, you know? Yeah. The free kick, so he could smash the ball in the back of the net, and with that stubborn-looked face of his. What I like about Stu Pearce as well is his background. You know, he come from a tough background, him. You know, from where he was to actually playing in the World Cup. And so, you know, I'll go for Stu Pearce, definitely a solid guy. And I wouldn't like to mess with him or play the right wing.
Centre-offs?
There's loads I could have picked. Quite a few, really. Richard Gough was phenomenal. Des Walker was quick. One is, first of all, I'm going to put Gary Mabbitt in there.
Friends.
Definitely. Before we began, beep, 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 if I don't, I can't be bothered, I'm tired, Gary. I feel when I first went to Tottenham, we had a gym. No, we had a car park. And in the car park was a hanging rope with a ball on it. And I'm like, what's that for now? So I see Gary Mabbitt heading his ball, you know? And then the first game we played away at Man City, we get on the bus afterwards, and he pulls his pants down a little bit and injects his leg. I'm like, what are you doing there? He went, I'm injecting my leg. I'm what for? He went, I'm diabetic. I'm like, what's that? He says, well, my sugar level's up and down. I says, how often do you do that? He went, well, I've got to do it every day. I says, well, how often? He went, 3 times a day. Imagine I've just really met him and I went, how long for? And he went, for life. To go through his career for what he did, wow, what a bloke. Mm. You know, and he was honestly, I think he was the only one.
Would you say he was underrated?
Yeah, definitely. I think he could have played more for England. But, you know, in training, he's the only guy I couldn't beat in training.
Really,
yeah? I just couldn't beat him. But, yeah, I mean, for going through all his career, for what he did do, you know, there's been a couple of times where he's collapsed at home and they've had to go and pick him up, bring him around and go to the match because he's been late. But to go through what he did and the fact that I think the only reason, one of the reasons I'm picking it is because in training, you know, when I was free to do anything, I just couldn't get the ball past him. And but like I said, he was well underrated as well, you know. So I'll put him in there.
Your other centre off,
Terry Butcher. Oof.
No Tony Adams.
I was. He's Arsenal. I really wanted to pick Tony, but
oh, that's probably why I'm not in it then.
Yeah. God, you beat me to it. No, I was gonna. Tony was phenomenal. What a leader, you know. I seen that bit not long ago on the TV documentary about him, and you were talking about him, and I realised how much of a great player he was, you know. And when he obviously got himself well again, even before that, you know, he was phenomenal. You know, he was a great skipper and leader. He's one of them guys. Obviously, you played with him. He'd put his head where some people wouldn't even put their feet.
To be fair, though, the person you're picking would do that.
Yeah, Terry. I think Terry is like. When I first went in the England squad in the dressing room, you know, and you're sitting there and you think, oh, what's a dressing room going to be like? We get ready to go out, and just Terry Butcher went, oh. And he looked at me, this is my house. It's like, oof. You know, no one comes into my house and takes anything, and out there is my house. And you remember who you're playing for. It was like, oof, okay then. And then that Swedish game, when he got the big cut and blood all over him, I'm sitting there and I'm looking in, he's getting stitched up. And I get a big gas there, and I'm like looking, and I went, wow. And then Bob Robson went, you, come with me. And he grabbed us, and I hadn't even played, right? But I've got the substitute. He went, come here. And I'm looking over Terry Butcher, and he's staring just like that, and his blood just running. And he went, and I'm looking at him, and Bob Robson went, so Bobby, that's what it's like to play for England. That is what it's like. And he's like, morning, Butcher, hurry up, man, get out. I need to get stitched up. And then, you know, you go back and you sit down and you went, wow, that's what it's like to play for England. And so, you know, big lad, and he had a great touch on him, but wow, I mean, great in the air. But like you said, you know, just like Tony, he wouldn't, he would put his head anywhere. He would kick his granny him. He's a solid bloke, and yeah, I wouldn't like to have played against him. And at the time, I think he was Ipswich, he was phenomenal as a young player as well. So that's me.
Back foot.
Oh, Paul. Well, you know what I liked about him? His body. Oh, what a lovely body. I fancied Gary Lineker. Honestly, I really did. I used to see him get the match odds after the game. Going, wow, he's beautiful.
Midfield free.
On the right, he could go both ways. This guy was phenomenal. I watched him when he was only 21 or 22 or something. I knew Chris Waddle. The goalkeeper throws it out just near the halfway line for Tottenham, and it's coming to Chris Waddle. I've turned because it went over my head, and Chris is attacking. But what he's done is it went over my head. He's half-volleyed it over my head. I've turned to get at him. He's half-volleyed again over my head and ran away, and I'm near the bench.
You know, I did. I stood and went, that was brilliant.
Terry Ferris, what are you doing? Did you see that? Unbelievable. He's like, get after him. By that day, it was too late. I mean, Chris Waddle, when he dropped his shoulder, half the stadium left. You know, and the one game where, when he moved to Mossy, I thought, I'll go and watch him much like abroad. And it, the first 10 minutes, it was a bit like that. And then he played AC Milan in the Champions League, I remember it. And he battered AC Milan after the game, and he scored with a back heel. And that's just, he was just made apart from everyone else. His skill was unbelievable. Even later on in his career, he was still playing unbelievable and still scoring goals, you know, and probably one of my best friends as well in football. What a player, though, definitely.
Definitely, top draw. Next midfield player?
The left side, I was going to, you know, there's a couple I could have picked, and I was going to pick Loudrup. You know, he was phenomenal at Glasgow Rangers. You know, I played long. I was just missed out playing with Michael. Latterly left when I arrived. Probably that's why he left. but Brian Loudrup, you know, in training, Merce, he had the ball. You knew what he was going to do to beat you, and you still couldn't stop him. He used to wind Stuart McCullough mad, but I played for some great midfield players as well. But on the left, I've got to go for, because I remember watching him, John Barnes. You can't leave a guy out for what he did, even in, you know, he grafted back. You seen that goal he scored against Brazil. What a goal that was. I mean, well, I would have been proud of that one. The crossing he had on his free kicks, his control, even his belly.
Yeah, getting bigger and
like, I used to say, hi, John. It's like, oh, John, how are you, lad?
But he was some player.
Yeah, and imagine them two. And what was good against them, the two of them could swap either side. And they could. Barnes had both feet as well. So, what, you know, we don't have that now for England, do we, really? Someone that's perfect with both feet and them two. Well, you know, you want to break for 5 minutes, just give it one of them, and, you know, and yeah, quality. John Barnes, I think, was sometimes underrated, especially later on for England when the fans used to give him a stick. I didn't like that because I didn't realise how good of a bloke. And personally, he's a genuine, genuine nice guy, a caring, definitely. Nice guy. So that must have hurt him, and I didn't like it. And when they used to give him a bit of stick, but what a player. My favourite player of all time, Brian Robson. You know, I actually call him Dog Poo because he's everywhere. I had the chance to play against him when I was 17 and a bit. In Man United, and that. I always remember when he used to play where West Brom when he had that curly, daft hair. And I remember running from box to box and he scored a header from 18 yards out. And for someone to come back from 3 broken legs and still play the way he played was phenomenal. Captain of England. And when I went to England, he went, Gazza, listen, you can't tackle. I went, I can. He says, well, what, you had 5 operations already, so forth. And I went, yeah, you're right. He went, what I'm going to do is, because I'm cutting my career. He says, any challenges, anything in the air, leave them for me. I'll take the cuts and bruises. But when I give you the ball, you make sure you do something with it. And I went, OK. And for that to come from an England captain, and what he achieved for England himself, you know, was just unbelievable. the guy was phenomenal, and everyone stood up to him as a player. Great bloke,
great.
As you know, he's a one-off for me as well. I mean, people didn't realise, but I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't really sign for Man United. It's not because of him, it's because Fergie had Webby and Brian Robson. So I'm thinking, well, where am I going to fit in here, really? Yeah. And that's one of the reasons, because I always... But then when I come to England, I had my chance eventually to play alongside him. Yeah. And, you know, he was always taunting us on the pitch. I was, Gaz, you know, hey, come on, put it in, you know? And it was like that thing, you know? And box to box, what an engine he had on him. Just the guy was phenomenal. One of my greatest players of all time, for me. Because in my position, you know? If I had... end-to-end stuff like him, I would like to think I would have been even better than I was. I'm not being big-headed. I would even more like to be the better player than we actually were, like, you know? But what a player. And I could have had Inchi in there, I could have had a few others, but now I think they would agree with me as well, you know?
Any man in the hole?
In the hole, it's got to be probably the most unselfish player I've ever met in my life. It's Peter Beattie. You know, he'd rather set someone up for them to get the headlines than him himself. And people didn't realise how much work the guy put in. What made me with stuck up with Peter Beattie and Chris Waddle in midfield was in that World Cup match. There's like obviously me and Brian Robson in midfield, but Chris Waddle and Peter Beattie were told to do midfield jobs in there, and they did it. You know, unbelievable. Chris obviously hitting the post, but with Peter was always available. He wasn't fighting a tackle, phenomenal finisher, but his passing ability. It was just, you know, there's been loads of times where I'm watching, come on, Peter, have a shot, and he sees something, and bang, it's in the back of the net, or he always looked for someone else straight away. That was his first objective, was to look for someone else straight away. One of the nicest blokes I've ever met. Wow, you know, and I still speak, a great, great, great friend, and I still speak to him. I was only speaking to him not long ago. And we play five-a-sides, and he's still got it in the five-a-side games. And it was, I think it was about 5 months ago, I was watching the Academy in Newcastle, and he went, Gazza, what are you doing tomorrow? I went, I'm heading home. Oh, there's a match at St. James's Park. I went, who's playing? He went, well, the ground staff against the medical staff and that. How are we playing? And I went, all right, and I play. So we're playing in the second half. I've sat in these two hospital ladies nursing thing, and I went, you got any morphine for a laugh? Right? And they went, all right, Gazza, I know what you're like. I went, nah, I'm only joking, I've had loads of operations. I went on the pitch. I went for a header, come down, broke me up. So I'm back to them two. I went, you got morphine now, please? Peter, I've run off. Peter, broke me up. So I goes to the hospital, he comes in, he's smiling. He brought us some wine gums, bless him, because I love them. He went, there, but they'll keep me happy. I went, cheers. I went, can't believe it. He went, I'm playing tomorrow, I'll be all right. Next day, he rings up and says, because I need 16 stitches in my calf. Yeah, I was laughing, and I went, I couldn't look, Peter. But yeah, I remember one game. In Newcastle, I don't know, you probably might have seen it, Merce, when I was an apprentice. He's done a sliding tackle, he's scraped it back, and then he's dinked it from the edge of the 18-yard box, a little chip over Corrigan, Joe Corrigan, on the 6-yard box. But yeah, it was, if you ask anybody that's played with him, you know, he's the most unselfish player, but brilliant player, that little jink he had.
Yeah.
We all know what he was going to do, but he could do it, you know, and he just... You know, he played. How he got his energy from, I don't know. Probably eating all them sweets, just like me. But one hell of a player, one hell of a player. He could have, in today's game, he could have made his own price. I think you know, he was just phenomenal.
And you two up front?
Again, you know, I was gonna go. I could have put Beppe Signore in there, even Mikhail, yourself, Merce. I could have put yourself in the hole. Not just saying this because yeah. I played with you with England, and I played with you at Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough were phenomenal. Well, I'll tell you what Warramona you were there, but yeah, I could have put you in there easily as well, you know. The front two, one is Lineker. I'm going with Lineker.
Out and out goal scorer.
Unbelievable, the goals he scored from outside the box. Zero.
He was just in the right place at the right time, wasn't he?
All the time, it was phenomenal. We signed him when we were Spurs, and I want to tell you, Venables, what's he like? And when I can score this guy. I knew he was a good player, a great player, because I've seen him in the World Cup and his pace and that. And I went, all right then. So we're playing the first four games or something, he's not scored. So I remember sitting telling him, I thought you said he was good and he can score. He went, give him time. The next game he scored four, so it was like, Gazza, shh. You know, he scored 38 goals. He won the Golden Boot and he was phenomenal. But it took me a while because he played abroad. to work them out because I knew I could knock the ball first time in just a quick glimpse. And he was getting a, wasn't too happy. And I went, well, you know, if you show us what you're going to do, he said, look, he said, when I go like that, people think I'm going over the top. It means I'm coming short. So I knew exactly just to roll it short for him and he could knock it off. He says, what he used to do is, in front of the centre half, he's grabbing up his finger. That means I'm spinning. So I knew. So once he did that, all I'd do is just get it and knock it straight over the top. And he was on it.
And he could run, couldn't he?
Well, he caught pigeons on his day off him. Honestly, he was so quick. But you know what I liked about him? His body. Oh, what a lovely body. Unbelievable. It was so smooth. It was lovely. I fancied him. I fancied Gary Lineker. Honestly, I really did. I used to see him get the match odds after the game going, wow, he's beautiful. You know, but what stuck me to Lineker as well was struck me in the World Cup in Holland, and it was hot that day. And he worked. He worked so hard for the team. It was incredible. You know, he lost 12 pounds that game as well. He lost 12 pounds. He worked really, really hard. And what a finisher. Like you said, you always seem to be at the right time, at the right place. And a good lad. I used to park my car up at his. He lived in St John's Wood. And every time I would go to London, I'd finish training early, park my car in his space. And then he had to leave his car outside and get tickets. And I'd turn up the next morning, get in the car, drive to training. Yeah, I remember telling Teddy Venables, can you stop parking in his driveway? Yeah, but there's no one there. He says, yeah, because you keep shooting off training early in parking car. And then he says, you got to stop. But yeah, and he's doing well for himself as well. Good on him, you know. But what a striker.
Yeah.
What a striker.
And your next striker next
The team? Next one, I cannot leave the guy out. Shearer. I remember I was at Newcastle and I think it was 19. And he was 16 or something, you know, something. And he made his debut for, this is brilliant, he was making his debut for Southampton. And I thought, oh, Geordie. Didn't really know who he was. And I went, oh, another Geordie. I went, Alan Shearer. Went there and played the game. The guy was phenomenal. And I went afterwards, one, I put my arm around and I said, hey, if you stick in, son, you know, you're going to be a decent player. And he just looked at us and went, hi, cheers, girl. That was it. Look at him. And I said, you're going to be a decent player. Wow, this guy could score. This guy could score from outside the box, inside the box. He had a free kick on him like a rocket. He's big legs on him. But I liked about Shearer, he didn't like getting messed about. Like, you know, he'd give as good as he took. You know, he'd get rattled, and you know what he hated? He wouldn't see him roll over. He'd get up. And if you look at the modern day centre forwards, the only one that really is close to him is Koska. Costa, the way And, you know, Shearer is like, when you see a guy trying to get in front of a defender, they're just like trying to move in there a little bit. No, you've got to get in there. And Shearer would do that and he'd back up on you, you know. And he's had his ligaments and he'd come through that.
Yeah, he'd be bad.
And the good thing, one of the good things with Shearer is like, even though he got rattled, he never let anyone know. He didn't. He's just always quiet and just gone with it. Yeah, well. Just get on with it because he knew he was going to get his own back one way or that. And the head and everything. That time when we played for England, I took the corner and Tony flicked it on and Shearer gets his head there low. And he just knew where the net was.
Yeah.
And it was only the other week when I was watching his 100 great goals on the Sky. Some of them goals were phenomenal. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And them are goals, some of them are not talked about unless you actually see them, you know, and think, wow, he did score that, you know. I had a lump in my throat. Because you know, I used to go training up in Newcastle, and I used to see him in the gym and that.
I'd be training, he'd be counting his money.
I went to his testimonial, and I had tears in my eyes, you know, because, you know, you sometimes think of me if I went back to Newcastle, but he went back there, and he showed them, you know, he had it.
Brilliant, mate. Thanks for 1-11. It was an absolute pleasure,
thanks
mate.
So much.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely pleasure.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Mate. Always lovely to see you, man.
Enjoy Sky Sports Live. On all screens, on the go, and the best bits on demand.